Welcome back to the F1 Geeks podcast. I'm Ash Sater, and with me today is David Middleton, race engineer from myracing.com. And I hope everybody's been safe and sound at home. How have you been, man? How's quarantine been for you?
It's been challenging because, you know, I got two small kids, just like you. But we're, you know, nobody's been sick. We've been healthy, and I've been spending a lot of time with my kids. So that's good.
That's awesome. Good. Yeah, we've been doing everything we're supposed to do as good citizens, right? Staying home, and when we go out, we are exercising incredible conservative behavior. And yes, I have to say, thank God, like, you know, we're all safe and everybody around me is safe, and that's all that matters right now.
That's right.
I hope that everybody listening, same thing is happening for you guys. Everybody's as safe as possible, and nothing dramatic has occurred, both professionally for you or health-wise. So, yeah, I have news besides all the craziness that's happening in F1 during the already silly season that's hit us. We had our second child.
That's right. In April. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Didn't even talk about that on air.
Yeah. So exciting. He was healthy, healthy boy, 8 pounds, 2 ounces, big guy. And, we named him Senna. So wife was actually the one who came up with that. I swear it wasn't me.
I'm going to say that's true. He wanted to veto it.
And, yeah. I didn't want to
talk about it,
you know? Yeah.
But now he has to have a Prost. So,
yeah. So we've got a Brazilian first name. He actually has an English middle name. It's Jax. Yeah. So, yeah, I know. That's right. You're right. We have to.
You got
to
have a Prost.
You got to have a Prost. Yeah. And then they can compete. Yeah. So, awesome stuff. We have so much to discuss today. There's a lot of cool things happening in F1.
A lot of things in general. A lot of things going on.
Yeah. It's fantastic. It's been really, 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 really crazy these last few weeks. We'll start off with, the season's supposed to kick off in July. That's the goal. Everything is going in place to have a July 5th race in Austria, and they're going to do potential back-to-back race with another July Austrian race on the 12th, which I think they're referring to the first one as the Austrian Grand Prix and the second one is the European Grand Prix if everything goes to plan. We lost the Dutch Grand Prix. We've lost Monaco, and we've lost a few others. So they're aiming for a 15 to 18 race year. Even if they hit a dozen, I think it'll be a win for all of us if they can even just get a dozen in.
Even if they get in five at this point, I want some live motorsports. I've been going back and watching I've been watching older seasons. So the one great thing is access to
F1 TV.
It's been
a godsend.
Much
good content.
Oh man, just going back and watching some of that. Like I watched the 81 season. I watched the Monaco one when Damon Hill was in the lead and he crashed out. And then I actually went back and watched 2007. I'm almost done with the 2007 season.
Such a good year.
Because I forgot just how good it was with Lewis and Fernando and just some of the other stuff going on. So
and
in that
Fernando
way.
And Kimi and Felipe and all
but
that.
The fact that Kimi
crazy.
Was so far behind. I mean, there's so much we could talk about on that, but we won't at this time. But yeah. So I'm just happy to get racing. If we can get some racing in, whether it's back-to-back at Red Bull Ring, I'm sure that some purists are going to complain about. But look, at this point, be happy we get anything and look forward to 2021. So that's how I feel about it.
Yeah, back-to-back races. When I first heard about it, my knee-jerk reaction was, what? I don't want that. But, I mean, I think you're right. We're at a point now where it's going to be great. All the racing we can get. If they have 20 races at one track, as long as I get races. Like,
I need some live motorsports.
Yeah, we just need some races now. Yeah. So, that's really exciting. Let's talk about what's come of this. There's some positive that has actually come out of all this. There's obviously negative as well. The obvious negative is we're losing a lot of time, a lot of other problems with commercially are going wrong. McLaren is having to basically pull out a second mortgage on the house to try to pay off and keep operations going and keep everything together. Williams announced just yesterday that they're seeking money. They lost their main sponsor, Rocket. they're looking for potential either share acquisition or somebody to come in and just put right. a lot of money down for sponsorship. That's huge.
Well, the Rocket thing, was it because I know Rocket is continually looking because they've been sponsoring a lot of esports and things like that. So I don't think Rocket is losing a lot of money, but was it? Do you know the reason of why?
I don't know.
Okay.
I didn't actually read the details on that. It was really fresh news. Yeah. I just saw that they're not going to be in collaboration with Williams moving forward.
Mm-hmm. It's probably maybe return for this year that they, yeah.
I think 2020 has been it's a wash for everyone. It's a loss. Mm-hmm. So you see a lot. I mean, you're talking every auto manufacturer on the planet is pulling manufacturing for the year. Like production has stopped. It's halted. I have friends that work at three of the biggest groups around the planet, and they're all saying like,
I don't know. I thought Porsche had restarted from what I heard.
They stopped. Production numbers are not right. going to be the same. Right. I know two of the largest German manufacturers, BMW and Mercedes, have the two most successful dealerships down here in Southern California, Fletcher Jones Mercedes and Crevier BMW, which is owned by Penske. Their inventory on lot at any given time, I'm going to give you arbitrary numbers, but just so you understand the percentages and gain a perspective. If they have 100 cars on the lot at any given time per month, they're now down to like 40 to 30.
Yeah, that's,
they're not keeping
that's crazy.
New inventory. Yeah, and these you're literally the largest dealerships on the planet that move the most number of cars for Mercedes and BMW. So I have a friend that works at a Mercedes. He's one of the guys at the Mercedes dealerships in Canada telling me that he's like, we have no new inventory. He literally went and bought two tech startups their Mercedes fleets for ride shares. He bought their inventory. They went under, unfortunately, and he bought their fleets and he sold them already. That was over a few hundred cars. So like it's showing you, I guess, the economics of what's to come and how this is now trickling towards our F1 teams and our sport, which again, going back to McLaren, they're a niche.
Right.
They don't even manufacture nearly the same numbers as Mercedes and BMW or Toyota and these other groups. And so they're having to pull out more money and ask for loans to keep themselves afloat. Williams is not even close to them either. A group like Williams, who's so important for us historically in the sport, this is going to be a big deal. What's going to happen in this next 6 months for them, if they even get that far? It's realistic. It's a very real possibility. We lose Williams.
I hope that doesn't happen.
No.
You know, we've talked about how we like Williams and just the history and well, I hope it doesn't happen. So that's the negative.
That is absolutely the negative.
For sure.
Now, where's the opportunities and all that? Because there's opportunities in every single one of those positions. Where for Williams, I think there's a huge opportunity in that we see some new life come into them with a new partner. Somebody looks at this. My opinion, which I sent Williams a message, whether this is actually going to even be read by them or not, but I think
and he's not joking. He did.
I really did.
He did send them a message.
I organized something.
I read it and heard it. So,
basically, I think this is a huge opportunity for a big tech group to come into F1. We have some really big positives with the Williams group that I hope somebody out there listening could relay this. Williams' largest token to bring in a new sponsor is WAE, Williams Advanced Engineering. They do some amazing things that have nothing to do with F1. They have to do with medical, that has to do with technology, innovation, and efficiency systems. And I think a tech group could very much find Williams to be a really huge asset. It will not only offer them an amazing global marketing platform in F1 and an R&D platform in a vehicle dynamics and engineering and that side. But an opportunity to capture new market shares and new categories because of WAE, because of Williams Advanced Engineering and innovation and creative development for any other product that exists.
Google and Williams.
Google and Apple. Yeah, Google, Apple, and Williams. I can totally see a fit there. Google's going crazy with autonomous development. Apple's involved.
What would a Google Williams team sound like? I wonder what they'd name it.
Imagine Apple and Williams. Yeah. I feel like that would be such an awesome fit to see Apple, especially with the new era of rules that are coming in the budget changes, I think it makes a lot more sense now for a tech group to come in and know that there's restrictions on development and that they actually have a viable possibility.
Great. It sounds definitely great in theory. I think
it's romanticized for sure by me.
Is of course American way of thinking, American tech, Silicon Valley way of thinking with the old way Williams, even though they do a lot of technology stuff, but I'm sure like at the core, there's still a way of thinking that may not technically mesh with the way Apple handles their business. But if they could make it work, yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah, I think some of the stuff we're hearing, and obviously we're speculating all this, and this is stuff that we would love to see. It's not in the works. I've heard from various people that were around during the BMW Sauber days that the big clash was what you just said. It was culture clash between the German and BMW wave wanting to operate and the way the British squad wanted to operate. The difference, and maybe it's not even, maybe we don't even have to go as far as culture, but it was just a difference in leaderships from mm-hmm. both the entities. So moving forward, though, what for you, obviously Frank Williams, the name, Claire Williams, the name, Patrick Head and all these people, would you want to see the Williams name stick around without them? And do you want to see a brand new group come in, take over, or just partner and see them continue through?
Do I want to see the Williams name stick around without them? No.
Without them?
No.
Yeah.
No, of course not. Because, you know, in some kind of romantic way, you know, I could definitely understand having a product that I want to pass down to my kids, or being the son of the person who brought something to Formula One. I mean, I would love, you know, if that was my family, I would love to, in any means necessary, to keep it within the family, to keep our name on it because of what my father had built, or if I was Frank, what I had built and I wanted to pass down. So no, I wouldn't. It's great to see the name, but you want to see the people. It's the people, you know, behind it. It's like, imagine Ferrari keeping the name Ferrari, but the family not at all involved in Ferrari. It doesn't feel the same. It feels a little stale. So yeah.
Yeah.
That's how I feel.
I definitely want to see them stay, but even if they sell out completely all their shares, I still want the name in there. Yeah, mm-hmm. because it's too historical to F1 now. They've done so much for the sport.
Wouldn't it feel different to you though? You know, if that family is not involved anymore, isn't it?
I can't foresee that whatever group that would come in would not want them involved in some kind of consulting capacity. So, of course I want to see them there, but I still don't want to lose the name altogether. We wrote a story on the website that talks about that and the heritage of Williams and what they've done for the sport and the amazing things that have come out of them. One of the things I definitely don't want to see, 100% don't want to see, I really, really hope that people don't start trying to pass blame on Claire Williams' leadership with all this, because we've seen her get criticized so badly online. Mm-hmm. Terrible. She's done an amazing job with the resources she's been given and the hand she's been dealt against her competition. So I praise her. I champion her. I hope that that's what's remembered and nothing opposite. Mm-hmm. So that's the Williams side. That's the budgetary side. McLaren and the new era of rules and moving forward. They're requesting money. I don't want to talk too much about that because we don't know the details of it completely. But the point is, even the juggernauts of industry and F1 are being, you know, shaken a bit right now with what's happening economically. And are McLaren the same team they used to be? This is something that I want to talk about, comparing them to where they were just 12 years ago, 10 years ago. And where they are today with the new ownership that's taken over in the last few years after Ron has exited.
Right.
And what they're going to do moving forward. And I want to tie this in. We're going to go backwards a little. We're going to do this like Quentin Tarantino. the other portion and the other big thing that's occurred right now in the last few weeks is the announcement that Vettel is leaving Ferrari.
Yeah.
And that Sainz is going to be joining Ferrari from Renault. I'm sorry, from McLaren. And Ricciardo now leaving Renault to go to McLaren. So this is a huge series of events that's been set off by Ferrari's and Ferrari's announcement of Vettel not being rehired. And
empty seat at Renault.
Yeah. And then
what it's worth.
And we'll bounce this back to what I just said about McLaren and who they are now versus where they were. And is this a good decision for Ricciardo to join them and why we think he joined them? So let's start with, let's go backwards and start with that and then jump back to Ferrari. So what do you think about Ricciardo's decision to join McLaren?
It's probably the best decision since you couldn't get Ferrari. I think Ferrari would have been the best decision. I think he wanted it. I don't know why. I mean, there's a probably a reason that they wanted Sainz instead, and it could also be that they wanted maybe harmony between the drivers, and you know that if Ricciardo comes in and if he's quicker and with Leclerc in some places, then yeah, that might lead to a feud. But I don't think it was the wrong decision. I don't want to beat on Renault, but looking at the landscape, if you tell me to, who would I rather drive for right now, Renault or McLaren, I'd pick McLaren. McLaren's been steadily making improvements. I know they're not spending money like they used to, and yeah, we're going to talk about that. But I don't think it's the wrong thing. My worry is he should be quicker than Norris. No offense to Norris. He should be quicker. He's got better racecraft. But I get the feeling like Daniel is becoming like Alonso with putting himself in on the teams at the wrong time. And the difference is when Alonso did it, he at least had two championships. And I think that elusive goal of him being a F1 champion is going to get further and further away. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't see McLaren winning a championship in the next 3 years. And then what? What's he going to do? You know, what's he going to do? Because you know that Norris is kind of the darling of McLaren right now. He's saying all the right things. He's doing all the right things. He may not be winning races yet, and he's doing things in the background that the Brits are loving him, and he's a British guy on a British team. You know, people are flocking to Norris, the personality, and Ricciardo's also well loved. But you know, who knows what kind of situation that's going to be in another year. If the head-to-head is tied, or if Ricciardo is only slightly ahead, you know, will he start to feel unloved? Will he start to feel like an outsider? So yeah, I do think it was the best decision, but it's more of a lateral or semi-lateral move.
I agree with that. I think so. When I first heard that Ricciardo signed for Renault. We're going backwards in time. I felt like he was going after. I felt like he was cashing out a little bit. I felt like he was not going to compete with Renault. We knew Renault was not going to all of a sudden jump for the championship.
Right.
They were incrementally making good changes, positively, but like it was, they weren't going to leap ahead of Red Bull, Ferrari, and Mercedes in one season, right?
Not without rule changes.
Yeah, not without a lot, right?
Yeah.
Not without some kind of secret weapon. But it's, for me, that was, okay, he got a multi-year deal with them. It was a lot more money, and Red Bull wasn't willing to give him a multi-year deal at that time, and less money. And I felt like he felt like maybe Max was faster than him. He was kind of coming to grips with that. Obviously, this is speculation. And I think the same thing is happening with McLaren. I feel like he's, like you said, making a lateral move to earn another multi-year contract. I think that's also paying him more again. And I think he's kind of cashing out again. And he's just, you know what, having his fun. Hey, and if it works out, it works out. Because the Ferrari opportunity is gone.
Right.
Because the Ferrari opportunity is gone. I don't think Daniel would have less motivation if Ferrari had knocked and said, yes, we'll bring you. I think he would have been right back up there, but I think he's making professional decisions right now in that regard.
Do you think, sorry, I don't mean to
cut
you off, but do you think he needs a situation where he's loved? Because at Red Bull, right, he quickly became loved. And then at Renault against Hülkenberg, yeah, they seem to kind of love his results and kind of what he brought to Renault. Was that going to be the same?
I made the commentary a year or two ago, I can't remember now, that Red Bull is like working for a tech startup. The culture there, the people there, the way they behave. And Ferrari would be a complete opposite. Ferrari is like working for like Old Oil or something, like a conglomerate. And Mercedes is somewhere probably in between. And I felt like the Renault jump was somewhere in between as well for him. And it's going to be interesting to see his personality mesh with them. And now McLaren these days, I feel, is like also revived and the new fresh like tech startup.
That's an interesting way to see it. I see.
And
see
Lance, especially with Zach. And this kind of brings me back to, we'll bring this now full circle to where we think McLaren are today, or where I think McLaren is now with their new leadership, their new ownership, and where they were. And I think this signing of Daniel is part of like Zach. It comes from Zach as well. Zach's background is marketing. Like, he's huge in marketing, very successful in marketing, and now he's leading this group. He's a very smart guy, very intelligent business side. But for me, I don't think Daniel and Lando combo is the best solution for development at McLaren.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. And, and you know, we're talking in 2007 to 2009, 2010, McLaren had a budget of almost $500 million in their going into the racing during the days of Ron. Okay. I remember reading that in the final like month of development during the 2008 season, when they were fighting for the championship, with the one that Lewis eventually won, McLaren spent like just that month alone, like $30 to $40 million, something, some crazy astronomical. Just in 1 month, they spent some crazy amount of money and increased the car's pace by like a tenth and a half in just the final like development. And with that amount of money, and they won the championship, and it paid off, right?
Right.
But that doesn't happen today. Today's budget of a McLaren is half of that. Mercedes, Ferrari, Red Bull, they still have the same budget that they had back then, basically, roughly. And so McLaren isn't the same animal as they used to be. And I'm not attributing that to Zach. Zach's not the say-all and end-all at the entire organization and on the F1 team. They have, he has bosses.
Right. He doesn't have the same power that Ron had.
No. And so, and
probably
and
will never have.
Yeah, right. I mean, he's not the owner like Ron was.
Right.
Ron was one of the major shareholders. So, I think now with the budget cuts, it's good. It is good on paper to see that there's going to be maybe a level playing field or more level playing field. But I don't know that McLaren is like a championship contender right away.
So you're saying that McLaren, for them to be champions, they have to win with less? And is that really an option
in F1?
In F1 with yeah. Red Bull, Mercedes currently, and
I think
Ferrari.
I guess what I'm going back to saying for McLaren, at least, it's, I think a Lando Ricciardo is fantastic for marketing. It's fantastic for getting people to love us more, getting that brand image. Mm-hmm. And I think that comes from Zach. I think that decision is coming from Zach, but I don't think it's best for racing. I don't think it's best for competition and performance.
Which is the better pairing? Lando Sainz or Lando and Ricciardo from a driver perspective?
I think it's harsh to eliminate Lando for any reason right now, because he's so young and he's still developing and he's still growing and getting faster. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to, like, if by me saying I wouldn't choose Lando, it's just because of his.
No, I'm saying what's better, to have Lando paired with Ricciardo or Lando paired with Sainz from your perspective? Let's say if you're looking at the next
long term.
Yeah, next 3 to 4 years.
I guess it all depends on your options, right? So, yeah. I probably would have stuck it out with Sainz. I would have liked to have retained Sainz. I love Daniel.
Right.
He's crazy fast. Yeah, and I mean, for every reason, every category, every checkbox. But for me, I don't think he's the long-term solution. I think retention of Sainz would have been my choice. But they didn't have that choice, it seems like. So,
well, do you think that Ricciardo's in decline?
I think
is he past his peak?
I think we've seen his peak.
Really?
Yeah, I think Ricciardo's peak was probably these last couple seasons, and maybe he has it again this season. But
how old is he?
And next season?
30.
Yeah, he's in his mid-30s now.
32?
Yeah. No, I think he's just like a year younger or 2 years younger than Lewis.
I thought he was a little bit. So Vettel's what, 34? We're not going to look it up.
Yeah.
But you're saying he's past his peak.
I think he's reached.
When was his peak then? Last year.
I think this last couple seasons were his peak. Yeah.
And he was in the wrong car.
And he was in the wrong car, unfortunately. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Do you think being at Renault has led to his decline? So let's say instead of being in Renault, he was at Mercedes, and he had Bottas's spot. Do you think he'd still be in decline? And this is all fictional.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I don't think so. I think he is where it just. I think it's just a matter of. Dare I say, just nature. Like he's just is where he is because of so many variables. But with that said, it's kind of like what you said earlier about it's just his decision to go to Renault and then now to go to McLaren. I don't think the McLaren thing, I personally don't think it's going to pay off for him to be competing for a championship. It's the luck of the draw. Just like Lewis, the opposite end of the spectrum, making the best decisions at every given time.
Right.
Working out for him perfectly. Which is great. And then now relay that now what's happened at Renault, and we have the rumor that Alonso is vying really hard to get back in. We've seen comments come from Flavio, his manager, about how ready he is and how motivated he is to come back to F1.
Yeah, of course he is.
Of course, yeah. And we've seen now Fernando talk on various, not podcasts, but interviews on social media about him saying, you know, it wasn't, he wants to race.
He wants to do it.
Whether it's F1 or wherever. But
right.
So, would Alonso be a choice for you at his age now and his absence for a year? Would you, if you were Cyril, if you were the manager at Renault, want to bring Alonso on?
If I was Cyril, no. But if I'm Renault, yes.
Okay.
Nah.
Is it the same thing?
Do you know where I'm getting at?
Yeah,
What I'm saying? Because I think Alonso's the type of person who comes in, no BS. He wants to win. He wants to do this. He's going to have a very clear idea of what he wants out the car. It's going to put pressure on Cyril. And if I'm Renault and if I'm going to pick one person to get rid of, it's probably not Alonso. So from Renault's standpoint, I want Alonso there because Alonso's also going to be honest. He's going to be like, this is what's wrong with the car. This is how you need to fix it. And the other thing is, and I think I've mentioned to you this privately, is I wouldn't know what's going to go on the business side. So maybe maybe Alonso's thinking about like, hey, I can become a part of like the Renault family after this. This is leading into my second career. And if I'm Alonso, that's what I would be pushing. I'd be like, hey, look, you know, this is, yes, I'm here to drive and it'd be great. But realistically, I think he knows that the Renault is nowhere close to being a championship car just yet. But if he can get it in that stage close and then with the new regulations stay on, retire, but then still become part of the Renault team for some, who knows, piece of Renault. I don't know how they would work it, how they would structure it. But if I'm Alonso, that's what I'm pushing. I'm saying
like a Kimi deal.
Yeah, like a Kimi deal. Like I'm saying I want to stay part of the Renault Sauber family. Yeah. This is where I won my two championships. This is where my heart has been. I want to bring Renault back to prominence. I mean, if you're Renault, you're like, that's a win, man. We got one of the fastest guys ever to be on the grid. Well respected, still loved by many. Why not? And if I'm Cyril, I'm like, oh God, this may be the beginning of the end.
Yeah. You know, he definitely will add a lot of value to development
and a lot of pressure
and a lot of he might be a very depending on his attitude coming in could be an incredible mentor to Esteban or could do the opposite because we've heard some interesting stories now since he left from so many people about how Alonso's dynamic was with the teams.
I don't think he has mentorship in him.
I don't think so either.
I think Vettel's more of a mentor. I think for a better team environment I'd want Vettel. Because Vettel also is going to come in and he's going to be very straightforward, but it's not going to be the same overwhelming force. It's going to be whether Vettel is going to want to step down to a Renault and know that he's probably not going to get number five there and that his career is headed towards an end. But at the same time, you're not going to offer Vettel a part of, and I don't even know if he'd want it, a part of that the Renault F1 team in the future because I don't think that's where his heart is at. You know, his heart is probably with Red Bull or more with Ferrari than it would ever be with Renault. He's not going to want to hang on to Renault after his career is over, but I think he could be a good mentor, and I think he could have a few successful seasons. So from a team environment, if I'm Cyril, I'd be like, hey, let's go get Vettel.
I wonder how they would structure Alonso. I can't. It would be great if he got shares and he got to be a part of the brand and the team. I just don't know how that would work, considering they have so much public money going right. into them. So, but I mean, it would be amazing.
But that's what I would be pushing for if I was Alonso. That's what I'd bring to the people who negotiate my contract, and that's what I would be saying. Like, how do we communicate that in the right way to get me?
Sebastian's in an interesting position because he's. And I agree with you. I don't see Sebastian going to a second tier team. I don't. If I feel like if he's not going to get a position at Ferrari or at which he's not, or at Mercedes, and back to Red Bull maybe even.
Red Bull's not taking him back.
Which I agree with that too. But I just don't. I see him retiring and walking away.
Absolutely, that's what I see.
I don't see him going to Renault. There's all this talk about him going to Renault or potentially as well, and. No. I don't see that happening. I don't see why he has nothing to prove there. He doesn't strike me as the guy that's, you know, I'm going to be fine running mid pack. I just want to race. He's only wants to race if he can win. I feel like he's going to move on to the next chapter in his life if he doesn't land one of the top seats.
I agree with you. I think seeing him at Mercedes would be interesting, but also Mercedes are very level headed. What do they need him for? They don't need him when they've got Russell.
Why would they rock the boat?
Yeah. When they've got, DeFries still waiting in the wings. So why would you bring in Vettel? And then it becomes kind of like too old. I mean, not to call Hamilton and Vettel old, but it's like two old champions.
Relatively speaking,
yeah,
they
but
are.
They're old. Yeah. You know, battling it out for what? For, you know, it doesn't bring anything to the team. And I couldn't see why. I mean, I'm sure in their heart they'd love to have a German champion in a German car and all that. But I just with Lewis there, it's just. Yeah, it's not gonna work out. So that's not gonna happen. I mean, I would be totally surprised. You know, there's not much that happens in Formula 1 where we're shocked, but I would be pretty shocked if they really both has to bring in Vettel. That would be shocking.
I would be insanely surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah. They have an incredible recipe that's been working for 5-6 years.
Right. why would you do that?
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. Let's that transition us back to Ferrari then, which kicked off all this craziness. Mm-hmm. They're the ones who set all this into play by not re-signing Vettel, not coming to an agreement. And signing earlier last year, we saw it, that they signed Charles for 5 seasons. Straight out, five seasons, gave him a 5-year contract. So we all know that they're putting their eggs, you know, they're putting everything into him. And then now they're coupling
he's number one without being number one.
Yeah. And now they're bringing on Sainz, to support, with a 2-year deal, which is great for Carlos, because the first year is very transitional for a lot of drivers and it takes time. What do you think? I love it. I love that Carlos is going to Ferrari. Carlos is such a level-headed driver and I think he could play a really great role there.
It's interesting because I think before the start of the season we were saying what's going to happen if this year played out and if Vettel leaves, because we didn't really see anyone in the wings for Ferrari, right? We knew that they weren't going to go get Max, but all the young drivers, the up and coming, they're not really ready. Schumacher's not ready to come in there. Giovinazzi hasn't shown that he was ready, and who knows, maybe he would have had a stellar 2020, but probably not that stellar. I mean, just. You know, nothing against him. I think he's a good driver, but is he a number two Ferrari driver? He hasn't shown that yet, right? So we were all saying, well, who is Ferrari going to get to fill this seat? We thought maybe Ricciardo. We thought, and they go get signs. So I think it's good. They've got a solid driver. Whether he'll have number two status, officially or unofficially, let's be honest, the team is going to be behind Charles. I think from Sainz, it's an interesting thing to do because when you came into Renault, you didn't really have the number one spot. But now you're at McLaren, and you versus Norris, you were kind of the number one driver at McLaren, and he could have sat there and been the number one driver. But now you're going to a team again where you've got to fight for that respect. So
it's the allure of the red cars, man.
I don't know.
I think a couple of things. First of all, I'm going to reference a really funny meme that I saw online, which was a Star Wars reference to F1. And it was a picture of Nando's face on, on Vader's helmet.
Okay.
A picture of Carlos's stepping up, and it was that whole line, "I'm gonna finish what you started." It was a picture of the melted mask,
okay.
The melted mask and Kylo Ren scene, and basically Carlos is gonna finish what Fernando started at Ferrari, and I think for me there is something there that has to do with there's an incredible number of Spanish Ferrari fans, and there's that allure of being, you know, loved by your countrymen for joining the team they love as well.
Right.
And I think Carlos, in general, I mean, he's kind of, I don't know that Carlos has ever found a home yet.
He hasn't.
Because he started off where? He started off at Toro Rosso, and then he jumped to Renault.
Yeah.
And then from Renault, he bounced to McLaren,
and now he's bouncing to Ferrari.
Yeah, and so I think, and he's never been able to compete. He's never, because he's never
like
had a
talented
car.
Basketball player who's been on like seven teams, but you know.
But he's never had a chance to show it, and I think that's the move. I think that's the reason. I think Ferrari offers a lot more in competition right now and in performance package than McLaren. And you know what? He's been at McLaren now a couple seasons, and maybe, I mean, he knows where the team is, where they're going, and he sees their future, and maybe he thinks it's not going to be there.
Number one, he's never loved the UK, and he's very blunt about that, saying that, yeah, he lives there when he has to, and then he goes home to Spain. But let's back up for a second. Him coming from Toro Rosso, going to Red Bull, he probably should have had Max's opportunity. Hindsight's 50-50, right? If you look at his progression, and you look that he did everything that they asked, and if you listen to his interviews and how he came up through the Red Bull system, they asked him go win championships. He won championships. They asked him, so he was expecting to be at Red Bull, and he probably should have. But Jos Verstappen was very good at getting his son. And in hindsight, you look back, you're like, well, Max is better.
You can't argue with that. Yeah,
you can't argue the results at this time. But who knows what would have happened?
Yeah,
Sainz could have been the one having the same. You know, possibly it's possible. But if you look at their careers where they were when they brought in Max, from a logical standpoint, how do you put Max in that seat? You really don't. It had to be pushing from another place. And ever since that happened, I'm pretty sure he's had a chip on his shoulder, and he's also felt kind of like, I'm looking for a home, and now maybe he can find it at Ferrari. Unfortunately, he's going to Ferrari when everybody is loving Charles.
He's so beloved by so many Ferrari fans worldwide. Yes. Yeah, not just internally.
Yeah.
I do think it's a positive move for him. I think, whereas I think the Ricciardo move is very, like we said, lateral.
Right. This is not a lateral move. I'm with you.
No, I think this is an upgrade for sure. I think it's going to increase his value as a driver. I think we're going to get to really see his talent. I think highly of Sainz. I've championed him since he started with Toro Rosso, and I was very surprised he didn't get the shot at Red Bull.
I really wanted to see him and Max in Red Bull. I wanted to see that.
Yeah.
But yeah, didn't
so,
happen.
Which, you know, now, I mean, depending if his heart's, I haven't actually heard his comments about his passion or lack thereof for Ferrari. If he's like a Charles, where Charles just dreamed his entire life of being a Ferrari and got it. So, but it's going to be good. I think no matter what, yeah, for sure, this first season, 100%, it's going to be a Charles number one and a Sainz number two,
okay,
for sure this first season. And we'll see from there what happens.
Do you think Sainz has the capability to win the head-to-head? Maybe not this year. But let's say, I mean, sorry, not this year, the next year when he goes in. Do you think he has the capability to beat his teammate and to actually win the championship for Ferrari when you know that the leanings, maybe even from the media, might be more towards, you know, they want Charles
to win. If the team is leaning towards Charles, then the answer is no.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he has the capacity to win a championship.
So he's got the pace.
Do I think he's faster than Charles? We're gonna find out. I really don't. Yeah. I don't know yet. I have no clue. I think this is gonna be our first opportunity to see Carlos race. Like, we're really going to see where he lies in the pecking order of these top drivers, because he finally has a car he can showcase his talent in. So, I think now Ferrari is going to have some stability finally. They've had some stability finally on the engineering side. Now they're going to, we for better lack of a phrase, it was a shit show last year with what was going on with the drivers. And so I'm really happy for 2021 that they're going to stabilize that category. We'll see what happens though now in 2020 with Vettel and Charles, and if it's going to be chaos again, or because it's
I mean, I know what Vettel I would has do nothing if I was
to
Vettel.
Lose. Vettel has nothing to lose
if
now.
I was Vettel, I'd be like, hey man, I'm going to try to win a championship. Yeah. Screw team orders. Yeah. Screw everything.
He was doing that anyway. Yeah. So why would?
But I mean, like, probably openly, like, you know, before the release in the media saying blah blah blah. But yeah. If I'm Vettel, I'm thinking, dude, this is my last year at Ferrari. I'm 100% giving everything I can into my side of the garage. I'm not worried about my teammate. I'm not even listening, because what's the worst they're going to do? They're not going to fire me mid-season? I think that sounds wrong, but hey, I'd be 100% for myself.
It's unfortunate to say, but I think that's what's going to happen. I think Vettel is going to just do whatever he wants and does everything he can to try to grab a championship this year.
And if that happens,
if the car is competitive, I think he's less likely to do that if the car is not going to be competing. If they already are...
I think it will be. And yeah, if that happens, then I'm going to say I told you so, because I said that earlier, that Vettel's going to go for self this year. But yeah.
Yeah. Now let's transition to the new era of F1 and the new rules, which were supposed to take place in 2021. But now it's kind of being, some of them are going to take effect in 2021, and others are going to be moved to 2022 and onward. Huge change is the budget cap. So in 2021, we were supposed to have $175 million spent for development. Now it's changing to $145. And every year subsequent up to 2023 is going to drop another $5 million. So why is that a big deal? Well, it's not the biggest deal for a team like Toro Rosso, right? Because they're already around that spending amount now, so they'd only be cutting maybe 10% of their budget. For somebody like Mercedes and Ferrari and Red Bull, it's for Ferrari, that's cutting them down half. That's cutting them more than half of their budget. They're a team that spends close to $500 million a year. And now they're going down to $145 million.
Yeah, that's huge.
So they're literally, well, not literally, but over the next year, they're going to try to figure out a way to cut more than half their workforce out, just completely reinvent the entire corporation, all their processes. Everything has to change. So it's insane change for the big teams. The small teams are super happy. Big teams are not. We've seen comments come from them.
Right.
Transitions happening too fast.
Gene Haas is like, that's what I imagined.
Yeah. So, crazy. Is it for the better? Hopefully. Yeah, on paper, it seems like it's a better option for a sustainable future for F1 and the teams, and for stability in that regard. The other big thing, which again, on paper, I'm crazy happy about. I think this could be really cool to keep the DNA of F1 and to level the playing field and create a competitive platform. They have what's called a sliding scale rule for certain development areas of the car. So example is, right now the teams, let's say, I'm going to use arbitrary numbers just to illustrate how it works. Right now the teams have a certain number of days allowed per week in the wind tunnel. So in the future, those number of days are going to be reduced, we'll say, to like 50. Days, 50 days per month or something. 50 days per month. Let's say 30 days per month. And in the future, they're going to reduce that to 20 days per month. What's going to happen is, if a team finishes first place this season, let's say, next year, they're not going to be allowed to have the full 30 days per month in the wind tunnel. They're going to be reduced down to like 20 days per month. And the last place team will have the full scale, for example, or more even, if possible. So what's that do? It throughout the year, the teams that are not as fast have more time to develop the car.
Right.
And the teams that are already way faster have less time to develop their car. So it allows the smaller teams to catch up in speed.
It's crazy. It's like an engineering BOP, balance of performance.
Yeah.
instead of them sticking weight and ballast into your car, it's like, all right, we're going to do it an engineering way, which is a different, I don't think we've seen anything like that, right? It's a very interesting, creative way to do it. How do you, we both said that we like it on paper, but how do you really feel about it in general? Or would you prefer to see it done another way?
Well, so I've always been, I hear a lot of chatter from people that haven't followed F1 for a long time about how it shouldn't be about the technology. It shouldn't be about the car, about the teams. It should be about the drivers. And the thing is, yeah, the thing is, that's not F1. It's never been F1. Literally, the scripture of why F1 exists is for innovation and technology. Right. And
if you
so
about the driver, you use Spec Series or F2.
Yeah,
or
and GP2. When you and you hear Adrian Newey and you hear a lot of the designers and a lot of the engineers and the teams and part of the beauty, I mean, the beauty of F1 is that it's not just about the driver. It's that it's about brain power. It's
right.
about the intelligence.
I'm with
it's
you.
About
I'm with you 100%.
The ingenuity and the cleverness of what they can come up with. And so it gives, it's literally holistically around every single aspect of every person in the team and what they can come up with mentally as well as physically. So, so yeah, as long as it can retain that DNA, it's okay for me. I really don't care what the budget is, whether they spend $1 or $100. And the development time, I feel like on paper it's great, but at the same time, is it artificial? Are they just giving a certain amount of people a certain amount of time at the top, and then the little sliding scale just basically pushes people around like artificially?
I think the brilliant thing about Formula One is people tend to find a way around the rules and a way around that. I would hope that let's say your team finishes first, Ash, and we say we're both on the grid, and my team finishes mid-pack, I would hope that these rule changes wouldn't affect the jobs of people. Because as an engineer, you know, it's like it sucks when your boss comes to you and says, okay, we're going to reduce this. You're not going to go. We're taking these responsibilities because an engineer, he or she, what do they like? They like to use their brain. They like to come up with creative ways. Personally, I would love, or I would prefer, I'll put it this way. I would prefer if everyone had to spend the exact same amount of money, you know, that's reachable to all the teams. Let's say whether it's 100 million, right? Let's say all across the board. Maximum you could spend is 100 million. Everybody has to spend 100 million. And then you use your brain power however you got to, because then you come up with creative ways to, all right, I'm going to put money into Aero. I'm going to put more money into this. I'm going to put money into that. And instead of a kind of a little, feels a little artificial to say, all right, we're going to reduce the amount of time you could do in the wind tunnel. So I would prefer across the board to kind of have a rate saying this is the maximum that you have to use, and you have to use this money, and then you can put it any way you want, but that's it. You're not getting not a penny more, not a penny less. You know, that's what you have to do. I think that would be also as interesting, I guess. That's what I'm getting at, if that makes sense. Does that make sense what I'm saying? And one of the things, again, I love about Formula One is not that people cheat, but they try to find a way around the rules. That's what makes it ingenious when it comes to the development of the technology, the development of the aero, of the power unit, of things like that. That's what makes Formula One so unique, is that you've got people trying to figure a way out. And I think going forward, I think the big teams are going to find a way, even if they finish first, to find a way, not necessarily around the rules, but a way to deal with it. I think, you know, and I would hope that if Ferrari finishes first, that these rules are not going to drive them to seventh, right? Because I don't think that's good for the sport either.
Yeah.
You know?
I almost wish they adopted one over the other. So if they have the sliding scale, keep the budget the way it is.
Okay.
And allow the teams with
because you think that's
the
equalizer. So if you're spending $400 million
or the opposite,
you finish first,
if you're going to shrink the budget that much, right, then just let them whatever. I mean, if they're not going to spend more money anyway on development, let them have as much time as they want in the event,
yeah,
whether they
like
want to spend 10 days or 30 days. So I almost feel like it should be one or the other, and then go from there, right?
Yeah,
and see what happens. But yeah, we're going to see. It, that's why I'm saying it feels a little artificial. I'm actually worried about one thing with all this, and we kind of briefly talked about this before the show, which is big companies don't come into a marketing platform like F1 or a sports platform like F1 so that they can be artificially bumped around. And I'm concerned about, is it really sustainable for manufacturers to want to be and exist here if they're going to be losing to John Doe Racing?
that you
and they're being forced.
Yeah, you bring a valid point
to compete.
And I hate to bring in another series, but if you watch any World Endurance Championship, last year Toyota had lost out a few races to other LMP1s, not manufacturers, you know, like customer teams. And as a manufacturer, do you want to come in and lose to a customer team if you're in something like World Endurance Championship? And that's why, you know, Porsche pulled out, and it's hard to get other companies to come back to LMP1 when that's a possibility. It's one thing to lose to a manufacturer; it's another thing to lose to, you know, can you imagine Mercedes finishing behind Haas?
Yeah, and I mean,
they're not going to be happy.
Romantically, yeah. It's great for Haas to do that, obviously, right. And I mean, it's great for all of us as fans too. But it's how long do these big brands? These big manufacturers stick around if that starts to happen.
Right.
And especially if it starts to feel like, you know, as we're saying, synthetic, artificial, are they going to stick around? This could very much backfire and do the opposite of what it's meant to do. So only time will tell. I mean, this is all speculative, so we're going to see what's going to happen. But I think that's a good place to segue into what is starting to rumor and bustle right now in the Mercedes camp and about Toto Wolff, and in the Racing Point camp with Lawrence Stroll. And so I'm going to do a quick brief, and we're going to talk about what we think. This is all rumors right now, so everything we're going to say is purely speculative, but we want to talk about it because it's fun. So a few months ago, Lawrence Stroll bought a majority stake of the Aston Martin brand, and not too long after, we saw Toto Wolff buy some shares in the brand as well. And there were rumors now circulating that Lawrence is looking to buy some shares in Mercedes. Mercedes already supplies Aston Martin with motors and drivetrains. And there was discussions of Mercedes, or not discussions, I should say, but now rumors floating that Mercedes is potentially thinking about pulling out of F1 as a manufacturer and being there as a supplier, as a just an engine supplier. And there was talk about Toto leaving his position as a principal, being a board member, as a consultant. And what does this all mean? So Mercedes now, this was yesterday, we heard about all this. So Mercedes now today announced that, about 6 hours ago we read, that them leaving F1 is what was the dialogue they
totally
used?
Totally unfounded, and did they say
unfounded and irresponsible?
Irresponsible.
That commentary came. However, the publication goes on to say that while Mercedes and Wolff are set to continue together, it does not mean he will be in the exact same role he currently fulfills. So it kind of leaves us hanging, thinking like, okay, well, that means it still can happen.
Right.
And especially because they didn't definitively say they're going to stay in F1 in their current capacity, that they're just going to be around in F1.
I think if they hadn't addressed it, I would have just left it as a rumor. But now that they addressed it, I've gone the other direction where I'm saying,
because they're not making definitive statements.
Right. I'm like, this might be true. If they had just let it fly in the wind, and, you know, and when you start addressing rumors, then to me, it makes me start to pay attention. And also that they, you know, if you're an engine supplier, well, you're still technically an F1. You know, you're still an F1. I think it's very interesting. I would, now that we're talking about it again, I would think that maybe it means Aston Martin would buy the Mercedes facilities. Maybe somebody else would come in and buy the Racing Point facilities and establish another team. You know, now that I think about it, because you don't want those facilities to go to waste. Mercedes has some of the best facilities now.
Yeah, I don't know. If this is true, I mean, this is such a speculative thing, and we don't want to, you know, talk too long about it. But if it's true that Mercedes is going just to be an engine supplier, and Lawrence is buying a stake of Mercedes shares, and not just the Mercedes F1 team, but like Mercedes in general, it makes a lot of sense, because now that he's so heavily involved at Aston, he wants to develop a partnership with a drivetrain corporate company, which, I mean, this goes back to actually the business side. Toto has been talking for a couple of seasons now. We keep hearing him talk about his next chapter of his life and what that's going to be. And he never says when, but he's always talked about wanting to get back into finance.
Right.
And get back
he doesn't want to do this forever.
A different business. Yeah. And he doesn't have an interest in doing this forever. So this could be a good transitional solution for him, where he remains in motorsport. He remains as a board member with Mercedes, continuing to support, and then moving on to something different, something very different. It would benefit Lawrence and Racing Point dramatically.
Absolutely.
Them buying the team, I don't think would be I don't think that's true. I think because what are they going to retain if the budgets are going to get cut and the staff are going to get cut? I mean, the biggest thing I can see them pulling from that is some kind of a dream team, pulling the best from their existing squad and pulling the best from Mercedes
Point
and meshing them together.
Wasn't Racing Point building a wind tunnel and all this?
They were upgrading.
Have they completed that?
I believe so. Yeah, I believe he put in a ton of money last year at the beginning.
Yeah, but it's probably not 100% yet. It would be interesting to compare what's at the Mercedes facility and what's at the Racing Point facility. I'm sure there's things that Mercedes has that doesn't. But yeah, of course you pull the best and the brightest people, but there may also be things there that you would want to acquire. I know it's
because of the situation with all the new rules and the budgets and all this. It doesn't make me believe that it's going to be an all out purchase, because he's going to lose a lot of that asset. It wouldn't make any sense. So
then what would happen to the actual facilities?
It would
go for sale.
Yeah.
And you think somebody would come in and buy it because you got a great Formula One team there already. And then the drivers, you got to think about your driver. What's going to happen to the drivers?
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, imagine Lawrence doing this. It would become Aston Martin Mercedes Racing, basically, especially if they create a commercial agreement, because there's going to be an engine supply agreement, not just an F1, but I imagine it's going
to
be a production agreement
who don't know about road cars already, that Aston Martin is using Mercedes engines already in their road car. So it makes perfect sense, you know, that it's reflected in Formula One and then, quote unquote, trickles down
into their product line.
Yeah. So, since I'm an engineer and I was an engineer, I actually drove some of the Aston Martin Mercedes some years ago before, you know, when I was doing testing and stuff. So, yeah, it does make sense.
Yeah, so we'll see. That's all rumors. So everything we just said is rumor mill. But it's a lot of fun. We'll see what's going to happen with that.
It brings up some interesting questions. What happens to Lewis?
Imagine that would shake up everything.
Yeah.
Everything all over again. Like everything that Ferrari set off with their decision not to sign Vettel that affected three teams.
Mm-hmm.
And this would do the same. And this will bounce around to all these teams all over again, too. Like,
Definitely bring Ferrari and Red Bull more to the forefront, shift the balance of power in F1.
Yeah,
and you've got to think, if you're Ferrari, you think this is our opportunity to get back on top.
Yeah,
you know, look at our lineup, look what we've got going, and if you're Red Bull, you're like, hey, there's no reason one of our biggest deterrents. They, Red Bull probably thinks like we could beat Ferrari. If we can get rid of Mercedes, we could beat Ferrari.
Yeah,
you know, so it'd be very interesting. Not if you're a Lewis fan, I guess.
No, yeah. And I think the last topic we're going to go over today is going to be a fun one, too. And it's interesting. You have some strong feelings about this. So there was another, and this one was a little bit more concrete, that Ferrari is running an analysis internally on the potential of joining the IndyCar series. And I'm going to let you just go ahead and start. What are your thoughts on it? From when you first heard that, did you like do a second take? Like
I did do a second take. I was like, wow, that they're even thinking about it. I would be like, why? But I don't know. I know it would make me watch Indy more. I like Indy. I don't love Indy. I'm not watching it week in, week out because some of the circuits they go to, but at first I was like, that can't be true. I thought it was just the Indy 500. And then it says like the whole season. And I'm not the biggest Ferrari fanboy. I do like Ferrari, but I'm not the biggest fanboy of Ferrari. But man, that would make me watch the season instantly. I also wonder how other American teams feel about that, letting Ferrari into Indy, and how much power. And because one thing about Ferrari and Formula One, they've got immense power. How would they feel if they're not allowed to have, and they won't have that same power running in an American series, you know?
We had a quick conversation about this prior, and let's rewind back to Roger Penske.
Mm-hmm.
So Roger now owns the assets of IndyCar and the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and the series and all that goes with that. And Roger, if you're not aware, it comes from a different era of racing. He comes from the days of Graham and all those guys, Graham Hill and Jim Clark, right? And all those guys. So he grew up watching and racing with those guys and all those names from like the 60s and so on. That was an era where F1 drivers were constantly, and it was very normal for them to do what Alonso's doing today, which is come and run in the Indy, come and run in other series right. constantly.
While you're still driving in
Formula
1.
While you're still driving in a full season of Formula 1.
Yeah, full season, and that's a key point.
So I can't help but think that Roger and his team have something to do with the idea behind this, that maybe they reached out and said, why don't you guys run the numbers. Look, you've got a huge budget cut coming from F1 in the next couple of years. You're going to have all this extra budget. Rather than canning it, rather than telling Fiat to go ahead and take it back, maybe they convinced Fiat and Ferrari that, hey, why don't you guys come and open up to this market? It's the largest market in the world for your cars, economically. I just can't help but feel like that could be a thing that occurred and that Roger, because Roger has talked about how he wants to reinvent Indy. He wants to make it great.
Make it great again.
I didn't mean to do that. But effectively, yeah. I mean, and the way to do that is to open it up to new markets, open it up to new demographics. Europe is that. Like, yeah. Europe hasn't cared about it in a long time.
Get my MEGA hat.
Yeah. So, do I feel about it?
Yeah. How do you feel about it?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of what you said. You know, Fernando, I don't watch IndyCar, so to be clear. Fernando wanting to run in the Indy 500 made me watch
absolutely
Indy 500. McLaren deciding that they want to now start competing in the Indy is making me pay more attention to Indy. Ferrari deciding that they're going to run, if they decide, that they're going to run in an entire... I will watch the entire season of Indy. I will start watching Indy. And you know, I'm an American saying that, that I don't watch Indy. And
well, have you been along the Long Beach Grand Prix? Because I've been to Long Beach Grand Prix since I moved out here. I've been every year.
I've been invited so many times, and I have never gone. And it's not because I didn't want to. It's honestly because I prioritize other things before it. And and I just, unfortunately, this year I was actually going to a dinner, a really nice dinner there with all the drivers and teams and everything. And COVID obviously ruined everything.
Right. Well, I like the Long Beach Grand Prix. At the time, my 4-year-old daughter there. She had a blast. I took her to a practice, and then because I wanted to watch the races in peace and also IMSA runs that weekend, like on race days, I went by myself, and then I met up with a bunch of other friends, and I did it 2 years in a row, and I like it because it's still loud. It's still noisy. And yeah, it has some flavor.
Visceral.
Yeah, it has some flavor of America, which is different from, you know, we've both been to F1 races too. And F1 races have a different feel. And I liked it. I was like, I definitely like it. Would I go see Indy at Oval? Probably not, because I'm not the biggest fan of oval racing, with the exception being the Indianapolis 500. So imagine Ferrari's there. I think there's definitely something to capture. Ferrari still has they have a pretty big following in the United States still. I definitely think that it brings some added value, and I concur with what you said about he comes from an era where guys were driving, and it harkens back. It's kind of bringing back that romantic feeling of what was going on between Formula One and Indy, and it's a good way to grow your brand, because as we know, on every aspect of motorsports, that you got to get the younger generation to really engage with motorsports. They're losing kids, you know, and losing young men and women who are, you know, just not interested. So,
yeah, I think it would be great. I think the two could leverage. They could leverage one another. If Ferrari enters Indy, I think Formula One gains too. Mm. I think people that watch Indy that don't watch F1 will potentially jump back and forth too, especially if multiple teams like McLaren and Ferrari join Indy. And so I think that could be very beneficial.
Would it help to get a race in Miami, do you think? Another race in the States? If Ferrari's already doing Indy and they're saying, hey, look,
I don't know. The situation in Miami. The situation in Miami is interesting, yeah, because it's of the it's the community decision. It's not. I don't know if Indy's going to. Well, actually, no. There's a lot of Indy and NASCAR fans in Florida, so that could. If they're gonna use that facility for Indy racing too, then I think yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah.
It probably could help leverage Formula One getting approval as well. So. Interesting. I haven't thought about that.
Yeah, because Penske's got some power.
How about you? like you're from MIT or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. It should be interesting. I think there's a lot coming in the near future. Something I'm not going to talk about too much right now, but I'll bring up is just for something for you guys to think about at home. All these rules and all these spec scenarios going pushed into F1 now. At some point, a lot of people know like the future of mobility is probably going to be electric. So at some point, how far does F1 go? Does it become Formula E? What happens to Formula E? And how is that gap going to be changed or bridged? And, you know, Liberty owns both now. Liberty owns the commercial rights to both Formula E and Formula One. So
yeah. It's
something to consider
we'll
and think
about.
We'll
talk about that later, but just food for thought, you know, Formula E is on... really narrow tires on street circuits.
Yeah.
And Formula One is not. So you can think about which way it's going to go, and we could discuss that next time for sure.
Very cool. Thank you guys for joining us.
Yes,
a lot to go over. Thank you, David, for coming in again.
Thank you for having me.
And next time, we're going to be talking about the rise of esports and virtual racing, all the drama.
Yeah, right up my alley.
Yeah. It should be a fun one. Thanks so much, guys. Take care. One last thing before you take off. We're going to be experimenting with various segments and formats in this first season. I really want your feedback regarding what you like or disliked. Also, please let me know if we make any factual mistakes with information so we may go back and list corrections on the F1Geeks.com podcast page. And if you simply want to share opinions or F1 stories, suggest topics for discussion, please direct them all to info@F1Geeks.com. Thanks again for listening, and join our community by registering to become an F1 Geek on the website. Membership is free and will give you access to exclusive Formula One content, events, driving or racing experiences which we host. See you next week.